The Gradual Parent Wean. If you have been helping your child fall asleep in her own bed for quite a while by lying down with her in her bed, on the floor, in a chair, on a futon, we've heard it all. One approach is to very gradually shift yourself out of the room, moving about 6 to 12 inches each night. This strategy can be very useful if lying down with your child is a well-entrenched pattern and you just can't fathom the idea of extricating yourself. We've met lots of parents who fall into this category. The process takes some time, but it's often a relieving option for parents who don't think they can use the reverse sleep wave or the regular sleep wave. When you fade yourself out of your child's room, your child knows what's happening. It's just so gradual that he becomes comfortable with the change as it unfolds. He has a clear sense that you are still there, even if he can't see you, as he's watched your path as you slowly exit. Since the parent's movement is very gradual, children usually don't protest. If your child does, let him know, during the preview or rehearsal during the day, that once mom or dad says goodnight, you won't be talking at all. If he gets out of bed, simply take him back to bed without any words, very much like you would do with the sleep wave. By the time you're out of the room, your child is falling asleep on his own. During this process, keep your child's bedtime and routine very consistent and predictable. Gradual parent wean steps. As with any changes planned for kids this age, start by explaining them during a calm daytime moment. For example, Daddy's going to move a teeny tiny bit each night until he's sleeping in his own bed. You can do a little play acting with animals or dolls, showing your child what it's going to look like. Decide what you're going to sit or lie on. Ideally, it's the same or similar to what you've been using. If you've been lying in your child's bed, you need a sleeping bag or a pad of some kind. Make sure that whatever you choose, it will fit through the doorway and into the hallway. The first night, only move a few inches away. Each night, continue to move 6 to 12 inches. Stay in your spot until your child is asleep. Depending on the distance you have to travel, you should be completely out of the room and down the hallway in about 10 to 14 days. It's a painstaking process, but don't try to speed it up too much. It's the gradual nature that makes it reassuring to your little one. Once you are completely out of the room, you can begin to use the reverse sleep wave, which is a great way to maintain a connected feel as your child falls asleep. If your child's sleep regresses after the process is over and the reverse sleep wave doesn't work, be ready to use the regular sleep wave so that you don't create the lying down pattern again. Sleeping through the night. Kids wake up and call out in the middle of the night for different reasons. Listen to this section and decide which approach is best to help your little one sleep all the way till morning. Make sure that you have listened to all the information in the Healthy Sleep Habits section of this chapter. Your child's environment and sleep associations are key to sleeping through the night. Make sure your child isn't waking up at night because she can't pull up her own covers, she can't reach her own sippy cup, or her room looks different in the middle of the night than it did at bedtime. For example, if your child wakes up in the night calling for you and asking for you to retuck her covers or find her stuffed animal, practice having her tuck her own covers and locate her animals on her own during the day. Talk this through with her to review exactly what she will do in the night now, instead of calling you for help. Encourage her, stay positive, and acknowledge any accomplishments, however small, the next day. Julie. The moms in my toddler groups over the years have come up with creative solutions to the tucking dilemma and other sleep associations. Some have described teaching their child to sit up, find the edges of their blanket, and then pull them over them as they lie down. Others will hang a blanket over the crib or bed rail so that their child can easily pull it up over them during the night. Many will tuck a sippy cup into the corner of the crib or on the nightstand so it can be reached. One mom described how, during the day, her child loved to pretend to be a little kitty, getting ready for bed and making sure that all of her stuff was handy. If your child wakes up afraid after a nightmare, you always want to go to her right away. If you've adopted all of the healthy sleep habits, addressed any unhelpful sleep associations, and your child is not having a nightmare, you can now use the sleep wave for night wakings. The key to using the sleep wave for night wakings is to go immediately back to the predictable pattern of the 5-minute checks and resist changing it up. the steps will be exactly the same. Staying consistent can be extra challenging in the middle of the night when you're groggy, but resist the easy way out, like lying down with your child or bringing her into your bed, as this will make it harder in the long run for your child to sleep continuously in her own bed. If your approach at bedtime was sitting just outside the door in the dark hallway, if you're not using the gate or a closed door, you'll have to do this again during the night wakings. Remember that the sleep wave works when you keep the pattern of your response exactly the same. And that applies to bedtime, middle of the night, and nap time. If you keep it 100% consistent, your child will detect the pattern and shift more easily to self-soothing to sleep. Waking up too early. Do you hear, "Mama," or feel someone tugging on your blankets before the sun comes up in the morning? Early waking is a really common sleep pattern for young kids. In contrast to the first half of the night, in which your child has more deep sleep, in the last part of the night, he experiences more light sleep. At this point, he's more easily awakened, and he isn't as tired as he was earlier in the night, making it harder to fall back to sleep. We've met many families in which the child wakes up at 5 a.m., climbs into bed with the parents, and everyone falls back to sleep until their regular wake-up time. If this is the case in your house and the whole family is sleeping well, then there's no problem. But often an early riser makes for shortened sleep for at least one person because he or she cannot fall back to sleep or sleeps restlessly after the early riser wakes up. If this is the case for you, you can work with this pattern and shift your child's wake-up time. To do this, it helps to keep the environment completely dark and quiet until it's time to get up. The body's internal clock uses light cues, both sunlight and home lights, and to a lesser degree, things like social interaction and eating, to help know when it's time to wake up. Your goal is to save all of these sources of stimulation until after your designated wake-up time, and to have a very clear boundary that keeps your child from eating, playing, social interaction, or, most importantly, being exposed to light until that designated time. If you are very consistent with this, your child's body will adjust. This can take weeks, so don't give up. Shifting wake-up time is one of the hardest parts about working on sleep. Expect this process to take some time. We know it can be frustrating, but it's worth it for the eventual payoff of waking up at the proper hour. Here's how to help the early riser. Don't shift your child's bedtime later, because this can backfire and cause him to wake up earlier. A good bedtime for a 2 to 6-year-old is still 7 or 7:30 p.m., depending on his nap schedule. It often helps a child to sleep later in the morning if he's put down a little earlier, so try 30 minutes earlier. Make sure your child is napping well, too. It seems counterintuitive, but a well-rested child is less likely to be restless in the early hours. Make sure that your child's room has blackout shades or curtains so that no morning light creeps in to signal him to wake up, not even a sliver. If your child can read numbers, have a clock in his room that he can see from his bed. Let him know that when the clock says 6:30, he can get out of bed. If he cannot read time, you can buy a nightlight that works on a timer and changes colors or symbols at the designated time. Talk to your child about how before the designated wake-up time, he will be in charge of his own stuff, which means he can take his own sips of water from a sippy cup by the bed, pull up his covers, hug his stuffed animals. You will not be coming in to do these things for him until it's wake-up time. Practice anything your child cannot do, such as pulling up covers or drinking water, during the day or before bed so he has a rehearsal. When your child does stay in bed until wake-up time, acknowledge the progress. "Hey, you stayed in bed until morning, just like your plan says." If your child cries for more than 5 minutes or pops up out of bed, go right to your sleep wave method until wake-up time, walking him back to bed or doing your checks if he's still in a crib. Be precise about the wake-up time. If you decide that wake-up is 6 a.m., don't go into your child's room, except for the 5-minute checks if he's crying, until the stroke of 6. Once the wake-up time has arrived, if your child is still awake, walk into his room and greet him, say good morning, open the blinds, and let his internal clock know that now it's daytime. It's okay if your child hasn't fallen back to sleep at this point. You're still helping him shift his internal clock. If he's still asleep at the wake-up time, let him be. It's best to let him wake up naturally. Naps. Most children need to nap until they're at least 3 or 4 years old. Until this age, naps are still a critical way for your child's mind and body to refresh. Before this age, if your child goes the whole day without sleeping, stress chemicals continue to rise in his body. He's no longer optimally alert, so he doesn't learn as well, and he can become irritable, inflexible, and less creative. Most 2-year-olds do well with a nap around 12 or 12:30 p.m., assuming they wake up in the morning around 6:30 a.m., and this can gradually move to 1 p.m. by the time the child is around 3 or 4 years old. Dropping the nap. Here's how you'll know if your child might be ready to stop napping. He's between 3 and 5 years old. He lies awake at nap time for 1 or 2 weeks in a row. Note, this doesn't mean that your child simply resists lying down to take a nap. It means he's lying down and resting, but he does not fall asleep. Naptime resistance, protesting getting into bed for a nap in the first place, is common and doesn't necessarily signal that your child doesn't need to nap. On the days that he does nap, bedtime has started to be a big issue. Your child either resists bedtime or gets into bed but doesn't fall asleep until 8:30 or 9 p.m. In this case, if your child stops napping, he might be able to fall asleep at 7 p.m. and get the same amount of sleep overall as he did when he napped. If your child is in daycare or preschool, he doesn't nap there either. If your child does nap at childcare but not at home, that's a signal that he probably should nap at home too. Nap resistance. Around age 2, many little ones start protesting taking a nap. Your child might cry and yell for you or simply roll around in his crib or bed, sit up and talk to himself, sing, or play with his blankie, anything but sleep. If he's simply hanging out in the crib or bed, that's okay. There's no reason to do anything, and you can let him lie there or play quietly for an hour. This is still rest time for his brain and body, and it's important to keep this routine and pattern in place to allow him the space and time to sleep when he's ready again, maybe tomorrow or maybe 2 weeks from now. If you hold the nap time in place, your toddler will most likely come around to sleeping again. Keep nap time consistent. If your child's nap time moves around every day, it's not enlisting the forces of his circadian rhythms, which crave regularity. Just as with bedtime routines, your nap time routine should be very clear every day, just a shortened version of your bedtime routine. Remember that anything can be part of your routine as long as it helps your toddler to wind down. Be sure to keep the routine the same every day. A toddler's nap routine might be reading a few books, changing diaper or using the potty, turning down the lights, singing one song. Jonah's temporary nap strike. Andrea. Because of the sleep wave, Jonah was an incredibly good sleeper and napper, but then, around 2, he just stopped napping. I knew this couldn't be a good thing for him or for me. I believed that napping was vital to him being the happy, easygoing child that he was. Julie advised that this nap strike was completely normal and, most importantly, temporary, and that I should continue his nap routine, even if he didn't sleep. For 1 week, no naps. And then as quickly as they ended, they started again. And he napped beautifully until age 4. I'm so glad I had this info and encouragement, because so many of my mom friends mistakenly dropped their child's nap at this point when their kid was just taking a little nap hiatus. If the reverse sleep wave is working for your little one at bedtime, start by trying to use it at nap time as well. However, if your toddler truly begins to cry after getting into her crib or bed for nap, do your sleep wave checks for nap time. The form these checks take will depend on if your child is in a crib or a bed, and what she does when you leave the room. So read the sleep wave section to decide on your plan. If your toddler continues to cry or protest for 30 to 45 minutes or so after you put her down, you can go into her room and say, "Okay, nap time's over. Get her up and try again tomorrow." Remember that most children are at least 3 or 4 before they truly don't need a nap. So don't take your child's protesting at nap time as evidence that she doesn't need to sleep until she's at least this age and also meets the earlier criteria for dropping her nap. Even after your child stops falling asleep at nap time, it's still good to keep a regular rest time to unwind and relax. Kids are active and constantly stimulated during the day, so having a rest time allows them a quiet and peaceful break. This means that if your child has stopped falling asleep and you're quite certain that she no longer is going to take a nap, you'll still lower the lights, do your naptime routine, and allow her to stay in her bed with a few books. You might even set a timer for 30 or 40 minutes of rest time. As children near the end of napping age, they often start falling asleep later and later in the evening, maybe 8 p.m. or later. However, once you know that your child is no longer falling asleep at nap time, you'll want to move his bedtime earlier again, as early as 7 p.m. In fact, when your child stops napping, you may find that he sleeps virtually the same amount in a 24-hour period. It's just that it's all in the nighttime now. Moving from crib to big bed. When to move from crib to bed. The age at which parents move their little one from the safety and limits of a crib to a toddler or twin bed varies. Some little mini gymnasts can launch themselves from the crib at an early age and take us by surprise. Other toddlers stay happily in their cribs until they're 3 or even older. Moving to a bed is an exciting transition for both parents and kids, but we recommend that you don't jump into it too soon. Most children make the move at around 2.5 or 3, although some make the move earlier if they've started climbing out of their cribs. By age 3, kids are more likely to have the necessary impulse control and understand the concept of staying in bed all night. As a general rule, if your toddler is sleeping well in her crib, don't fix something that isn't broken. We know a lot of parents who have moved 2-year-olds to the big bed only to have a little escape artist a few months down the road. That said, safety is always number one. So if you even suspect that your child is close to climbing out, it's a very good idea to either move her immediately, depending on her age, or if she's still under 2 years old, make sure the mattress is at the lowest level and try putting cushions, couch cushions work well, around her crib at night, just in case. How to move from crib to bed. When you first move your child to a bed, to prevent her from rolling out, you can use a crib that converts to a toddler bed, a twin bed against the wall with a railing on the outside, or a mattress on the floor. You can always add the frame later if you're using a twin mattress. If you haven't already, be sure that the room is 100% childproof before getting the new bed. Find a way to make the new bed feel cozy with sides, similar to a crib. You can use bed rails, pillows, or rows of stuffed animals. Expect the transition to take a week or two for most toddlers. It's a big change. Keep the transition clear by removing the crib from your child's room. We know quite a few toddlers who struggle with this transition because their crib was in sight and they felt torn, understandably. Crib bed confusion. Bronwyn. Our 2-year-old Henry had been happy in his big boy bed for about a month when all of a sudden he was in tears and in a panic over bedtime. Henry was asking to return to his old crib, still assembled in his bedroom. My husband and I thought that we were empowering Henry by allowing him the choice of whether or not to return to his crib. In the end, letting him choose where he slept was too heavy a responsibility. He needed to be confident that his parents were in charge. Henry said goodbye to his crib, briefly mourned the loss, and from then on, we no longer had the drama connected to his new bed. If possible, put the new bed in the same spot as the crib. Keep some familiar blankets and bedding from the crib. Prepare your child for the move by rehearsing with her stuffed animals during daytime play what it will look like. Have the stuffed animals go through the bedtime routine and sing the songs. Let her lead the play if she will. It will help her feel in charge. If you're using the reverse sleep wave, this is a good time to rehearse how it will go. Keep your bedtime routine consistent and include a new book about transitioning to the big bed. You could buy one or make a simple one. Help your child relate to this transition by pointing out children he knows who have moved to the big bed. Ask his grandparents to tell him about when you moved to the big bed or tell him yourself. If you're moving your toddler to a bed in preparation for a new baby, be sure to do so at least several months in advance so he doesn't feel like the baby has taken his place. Some kids take to this new arrangement very well. Others have a honeymoon period of excitement in which they stay in their beds beautifully, but after the novelty has worn off, they start getting up at bedtime or in the middle of the night. The first night that your child sleeps in a big bed, use the reverse sleep wave to help him adjust. You can keep these 5-minute checks in place for months or years. As long as the checks are short and sweet, they're a nice way for your older child to transition to sleep. If your little one is having a hard time with the freedom of the bed and keeps popping up, it can be very helpful to install a sturdy baby gate for safety and to create the feeling of the expanded crib. If your child is a climber, get one that either has vertical slats or has a flat surface. The goal is that there's nowhere for a foothold. In this case, once you've gotten her comfortable in her new bed, you can use the reverse sleep wave or the regular sleep wave to help her learn the pattern of sleeping all night in this exciting, wide-open sleep space. Nightmares and night terrors. Nightmares. Nightmares are normal and common for little kids. In the preschool years, bad dreams begin, or at least they become obvious to parents because, 1, kids have advancing cognitive skills and powers of imagination. 2, it's still hard for little kids to distinguish reality from fantasy, so dreams can feel very real. 3, little kids have language, and they can tell us about their bad dreams. 4, kids know that bad things can happen. As children get older, they're exposed to ideas and stories that let them know that bad events are possible. This is why many kids have anxiety dreams about being left or not being able to find mom or dad. Having scary dreams is a fact of life for many little ones. It's not realistic to expect them to go away completely. Your goal as a parent is to help soothe your child and calm her down after a nightmare, while also helping her feel comfortable and confident in her room and stay in charge of self-soothing back to sleep. Respond and soothe. If your child cries and is afraid after a nightmare, go to her and do whatever is needed to calm her down. Some kids just need your presence beside them and a stroke on the back, whereas others might need you to pick them up and hold them until they're calm. Don't add a feeding of milk at night to comfort your child, though, as she doesn't need this soothing association in the middle of the night. If she needs a drink, put a sippy cup of water next to her bed at bedtime. Let your child know that you're there and that she's in her room with all the same toys, books, animals, and so forth that she always has during the day. Dreams can feel very real. You probably know this from your own experience, and especially for young kids. In fact, your child may insist that something bad truly happened and it wasn't a dream. In this case, just let her tell the story and express her feelings rather than trying to convince her it didn't really happen. Remind her of where she is and that everything is okay. Talk about bad dream strategies. During the day or at bedtime, talk to your child about ways that she can comfort herself and feel better after a nightmare. The point of these techniques is to empower your child. You want her to feel confident and in charge of her fears as much as possible. There are lots of choices here, so try a few and see what works or create your own. For example, at bedtime, give her stuffed animal extra hugs and kisses so that she can access them on her own after bedtime, anytime she needs them. Say this clearly as part of the bedtime routine. For example, I'm giving Teddy 10 kisses that are just for you if you need them tonight. Tell your child that flipping her body over to the other side or flipping the pillow will change the channel on the bad dream. If she doesn't like the dream she's having, she can use this technique to change it. This gives her a concrete way to feel in control. During the day, have your child practice closing her eyes and imagining a happy or comforting image or story. You can talk about replacing bad thoughts with good ones, or coach her on how to envision a good story in her mind while falling asleep or after a bad dream. Initially, when you teach your child to flip her body, change her channel, or replace bad dreams with good ones, she might say, "It doesn't work. The bad stories just come back." Respond with something like, "That's okay. It takes practice. It's okay to have scary thoughts. Just say, 'No thanks. to them and move your mind to a different story. Help her come up with a few good stories, like thinking about a holiday or a fun family trip. Some people use a dream catcher, a special object in the room meant to ward off bad dreams, to help their child feel comfortable falling asleep. Attach the dream catcher somewhere close to the bed, but don't have it loose in the bed. You want it to be reassuring, but not something your child can lose or has to fuss with. Dashiell's bad dream technique. When my son Dashiell was 5, he was having occasional nightmares. I taught him how to flip his body over to feel better, but he came up with his own technique, which he told me about one morning. Instead of flipping the pillow or your body, you have to think about flipping your mind. Sometimes flipping things outside your body doesn't work, but when you flip objects inside your body and in your brain, it could help. Like if I had a bad dream and it was pointing towards me, and the good dream is pointing to the room. You think, and then you flip your mind around so the good dream is toward you now. He also told me that this technique works for small and medium bad dreams. For large bad dreams, he needs mom or dad. Help your child feel comfortable in her room. Spend a little time in the dark in your child's room, talking about how shadows are created, what light and dark really are, playing with light sticks or flashlights, and pointing out how objects in the room are the same, even when it's nighttime. Make sure she has a lovey or a stuffed animal that she likes. Try using a nightlight to see if this helps with fears of the dark, although some children feel more afraid when they wake up and see dark objects and shadows that are created by nightlights. Find what works best. If your child is afraid of the dark, let her simply express these fears and be curious about them, rather than just telling her there's nothing to be afraid of. For example, if your child says there's a monster in the closet, start by asking her to tell you what it looks like, sounds like, and does. Ask her what she thinks about this monster. Once you've listened to her answers or gleaned them from her manner and expression, empathize. Let her know you understand how she feels and that you remember feeling like that when you were her age. Once you've acknowledged her fear, you can tell her that monsters aren't real, but they only exist in our imaginations, like dogs who can talk or teapots that sing. Some children will show you exactly how they need to process their fears by becoming somewhat fascinated by things like monsters and wanting to read books or look at pictures of them and talk about them a lot, usually with mom and dad right there for protection. This leaning in to what they're afraid of helps them to tame their fears by naming them and getting to know them better. Our tendency as parents is to immediately distract or dismiss fears, but that rarely helps kids move forward. Getting comfortable in the dark. Allie. When my girls Sienna and Riley were almost 3, there was a period when they were really afraid of the dark. I filled a box with glow-in-the-dark toys, flashlights, glow stick jewelry, and glow-in-the-dark books and stickers. We'd have glow-in-the-dark parties, playing with all of these toys. We would also play with flashlights and make shadows on the wall. This helped them to understand the concept of shadows and eliminated their fear of shadows. Our girls got to a place where they were excited to turn off the lights, and they were no longer afraid of the dark. Return to your bed. It's very tempting to stay in your child's room until she's fully asleep, or bring her into your room after a nightmare. There's nothing wrong with doing this occasionally, but if it becomes a habit, you are way more likely to start hearing from your child every night. This isn't good for her sleep or yours. Comfort your child until you can see that she's calm. Remind her that you're just down the hall. Review her self-soothing strategies and gently walk out of the room. Most children return to sleep after this, especially if they know that you sleeping with them or climbing in bed with you is not an option. If your child says she will not stay in bed, cries when you leave, or climbs out of bed to follow, tell her that you'll check on her in 5 minutes and use your reverse sleep wave to do so. Make sure to review all your strategies for calming down after a bad dream with her, both during the day and at night. Process the fears. You can talk about fears of the dark and bad dreams during the day. Just keep in mind that although dreams can be very intense, they can also slip from memory very quickly. Think about how infrequently you remember your own dreams. If your child is willing to talk about or draw pictures of dreams during the day, that's great. You could open the conversation by talking about your own dreams. Kids love to hear us talk about our experiences. But if she doesn't remember or doesn't want to talk about it, don't press. Just review soothing strategies before bed again that night. Avoid scary TV shows and movies. We live in a world where scary media is absolutely everywhere, even often in the middle of a children's film. Little children should never watch truly scary movies or shows, despite how common they are. Also, if your child is scared of a scene or a portion of a movie or show, respect his fear and fast forward, or help him leave the room during the scary part. Little kids are too young to grasp the difference between made-up scary and real scary. These images and themes can definitely contribute to nightmares. Night terrors. Night terrors are different from nightmares. A nightmare is a scary dream that typically happens during REM, or rapid eye movement sleep, and often during the last half of the night, when the most REM sleep occurs. During a nightmare, your child can wake up, cry, call for you, be afraid, and tell you what happened in the dream or why she's upset. After some time with your comfort, your child calms down. Kids often remember this event the next morning, even if they don't remember the dream itself. Night terrors, also called confusional arousals or sleep terrors, are periods in which your child cries, whines, yells, and can even move around in her bed, even with her eyes open, but she's not fully awake. Night terrors can be very disturbing for parents because the child having a night terror seems incredibly upset and fearful, but is also inconsolable and doesn't wake up. This can last a few minutes or sometimes a longer period, after which the child often goes back to sleep without ever fully waking up at all. Even if your child does wake up, she probably won't remember the episode in the morning. Night terrors happen in the transition out of deep sleep, or non-REM sleep, and usually at the end of a child's first sleep cycle, that is, in the first couple of hours after bedtime. Since a night terror doesn't occur in REM sleep, it's not a bad dream. It's more like your child is in a disassociated state, caught between a deep sleep and wakefulness. In fact, brain activity during a night terror suggests that the brain is in different states of waking and sleeping simultaneously. It can be really upsetting to see your child having a night terror, especially if you don't know what's happening. Your instinct is to hold, hug, or try to wake your child up. This usually doesn't work, though. In fact, you might find that it makes it worse. If that's the case, just sit next to your child, stay with him through the episode, and make sure he doesn't hurt himself, for example, by falling out of bed. Generally, night terrors aren't something to worry about. They're thought to have a genetic component, so they can run in families. Sleep deprivation or irregular sleeping schedules may also trigger episodes of night terrors in those kids who are predisposed. Sleep apnea, a disorder in which obstructed breathing causes a person to wake up repeatedly and briefly through the night, can also be a trigger for night terrors. Night terrors usually resolve on their own, but it's a good idea to mention them to your pediatrician if they happen frequently. Bumps in the road for toddlers. Life will sometimes throw your child's sleep off course for a bit. As you listen to this section, notice these four steps emerging as a common theme when dealing with sleep regression, or ideally heading it off before it happens. Number one, prepare your child for the change. Number two, only tackle one big change at a time, if you can help it. Number three, add 10 to 15 minutes to your calming bedtime routine. Number four, your child needs you to hold on to the steps of the sleep wave. Starting a new school. This can be a big transition for kids and can temporarily affect their sleep. Do all that you can to ease the transition for your child. Visit her school with her so that she grows accustomed to the new people and setting. Play act school time at home with her stuffed animals. Make her a personalized little book, or you can use a website where they make it for you, describing her new schedule and activities. And most important, make sure to have her connect with a particular teacher or classmate in the school. Don't plan any big changes in sleep or anything else while she's transitioning to school. She may need 15 to 20 minutes of extra book and cuddle time during your bedtime routine for a week or two as she copes with all these changes, so start a little earlier than usual. You can include a book about starting school, tell her stories about when you experienced the same thing, or discuss her ups and downs from the day. You may also find her taking a little longer to fall asleep or waking up more often at night. This is normal and temporary. Stick to your sleep wave strategies, do your 5-minute checks if she's crying, and she will be back on track before you know it. It's common for parents to revert to lying down with their child until she's asleep or bringing her into the parent's bed, but resist doing either of these. What your child needs from you during a big change is to hold on to the predictable structure of how bedtime unfolds. The undoing of them can be daunting, and the lack of sleep that comes as a result will make it even harder for your child to adapt to the new school. New baby on the way. No doubt this is one of the most significant transitions for your child. Imagine that your spouse came home one day and you introduced him to your new second husband or wife and told him that he would love this new mate of yours and to play nicely with him. Not easy for many little ones to adapt smoothly. Create a photo book for your child about his own birth and infanthood. Put some of his baby photos around the house where he can see them. Get a realistic baby doll and show him how you took care of him. Read lots of books about what a new baby is like, and share the plan with him for what will happen when the birth takes place. Let him choose some elements of the plan, like which PJs or books to pack for the new baby, as well as his routine at home. You get the idea. There's much you can do to prepare, and you will tailor it for your child's age and personality. Steps 2, 3, and 4 are essentially identical to the way you would approach starting a new school, as described earlier. Helping a toddler adjust to a new baby. Jennifer. Thanks to the sleep wave, Morton had been sleeping 10 to 11 hours through the night since he was 4 months old. He was 12 months old when we brought home baby Mac. Starting the first night his brother was at home, Morton began waking at 2 a.m. with screams and crying that lasted 2 to 3 hours. This went on for 5 to 6 weeks. We started spending extra quality time with Morton, and I also spent an extra 5 to 10 minutes with him in his room just before putting him in his crib. It helped us all and put a stop to the early morning waking. Moving. Moving can be exciting, but it's also a stressful time for the whole family. Preparing your child will include maintaining as much familiarity as possible while helping her adapt to all of the inevitable new stuff. Visit the new home a few times if possible and spend some fun time playing there. Make her a book about the moving day with photos of her old and new home and room. Talk about how it may feel to move and how you will feel sad to say goodbye to the old home. Let her know it's normal to miss the old and feel excited about the new all at the same time. Pack a special moving carton for her, have her help if she's old enough, with everything she'll need and want right away. This may include her bedding, curtains, PJs, favorite toys and stuffed animals, special books, and anything else in her bedroom that will make the new room feel familiar. Let her witness a bit of the move, when the truck arrives and a few minutes of the move on both ends, but if possible, have someone care for her during the bulk of the move. When she arrives at the new home, either have her room already set up, or if she's old enough, have her help a bit. Spend some time playing and lounging in her new room so it begins to feel comfy and familiar to her. If she's sad or she cries about missing her old home, empathize and let her know it's normal to feel this way. Again, steps 2, 3, and 4 are essentially identical to earlier scenarios. You'll find a way to tailor them to your family's unique needs. Company in the house. How fun to have grandma and grandpa or a favorite bunch of cousins come to visit. But where will everyone sleep, and what will this mean for all of your meticulous work on bedtime consistency and structure? Preparing for company will depend on many things, including your space, your child's temperament or flexibility, and what activities you'll be doing. It's good for kids to flex and adapt to change within reason. This may mean having cousins sleep in their room with them, or moving their crib to an office or hallway so someone can use their room. Try to choose the plan with as little disruption as possible, and above all, Avoid resorting to the most difficult sleep associations to undo, such as lying down with your child until she falls asleep. If the best sleeping arrangements are for your child to sleep in your bed, tell her that this is a special time. Mark how many days it will be on the calendar, and count down those days until the transition back to normal sleep in her own bed. If your child has a history of difficulty sleeping on her own, it's a good idea to avoid bringing her into your bed at all. In this case, find another setup that doesn't confuse her and make her sleep regress. Try to minimize disruptions in your routines and bedtime. Your visitors can take part in reading books and singing songs. And once your little one is sleeping, you can enjoy some grown-up conversation. Many parents love the idea of holding a nap time structure, as this also gives them the chance to bow out and take a little break and rest. Review steps 2 to 4 for adjusting back to your normal routine after your company has departed. Troubleshooting. My child is potty training. What should I do for sleep? Wily little toddlers, how well they can sense a chink in our armor. Many parents have told us that while they can set limits on more sips of water or just one more book or song, when it comes to, I gotta go potty, all of their resolve goes out the window, and bedtime often extends into an endless parade of potty trips. For most children, including a last trip to the potty as part of the last call for stuff is the most effective approach to a smooth bedtime. After last call, on goes the pull-up diaper and into bed until morning. Once your child is reliably waking up dry in the morning, you can move to cotton training pants and eventually to big girl or boy underpants. It's perfectly fine to have your child wearing underwear and using the potty during the day, but wearing a diaper or pull-up at night until he reliably wakes up dry. That could be a year or more later when he finishes daytime potty training. Occasionally, we hear of a child who is allowed to get up during the evening or the night to go potty and does just fine going potty and going right back to sleep. Other parents wake their child up to use the potty before they themselves go to bed at 10 or 11 p.m. If either of those approaches works without disrupting or decreasing sleep for anyone, it's perfectly fine. However, in our experience, most toddlers and young children don't fit this description, and they'll get up over and over at bedtime or be incredibly unhappy if we try to wake them to use the potty in the middle of the night. My child was sleeping well and now he's not. What do I do? It's indeed shocking how quickly your toddler and older child's good sleep patterns can be thrown off course. For example, you take a trip where the whole family is all sleeping in the same room, in a different time zone, or in a place where any crying would disrupt others, or all three. Your child gets sick and has a hard time going back to the usual sleep pattern, a nightmare interrupts your toddler's sleep and you bring her into your bed, or any significant transition happens, like a new caretaker, parents separate or divorce, company comes to visit, the child spends time with grandparents, and so forth. After any of these common life events, your child may very well develop a new set of unhelpful sleep associations. The two most common unhelpful sleep associations are the parent lying down in the child's room until he falls asleep and bringing the child into the parent's bed. Do your best during any of the above disruptions not to regress any more than necessary. Unhelpful sleep associations develop almost instantly for little kids. Knowing this will motivate you to avoid them if possible. The less you resort to overhelping, the easier it is to get back on track once the disruption is over. If you have regressed all the way to the point where your child now expects you to either stay in her room until she's asleep or bring her into your bed at any point during the night, don't worry. Go back to the sleep wave and reverse sleep wave and recommit to the consistent plan. My child comes into our bed at 5 a.m. every morning. Is that a problem? We always say there's no one right way to sleep. Ask yourself, number one, is everyone sleeping well? And number two, is everyone okay with this plan? Is it working for the family? If the answers are yes, then you don't need to change a thing. Some families sleep a full night with their kids coming into bed early in the morning because both kids and grown-ups easily fall back to sleep. Or even better, the parents never wake up to begin with. If your child comes into your bed and you're sleeping 7 or 8 hours and your child is sleeping 11, or his full sleep requirement, you're good to go. Will one night in our bed set us back in terms of good sleep habits? This really depends on your child. Some kids can sleep in their parents' bed when traveling, if having a nightmare, or when visitors come to the house, and then go straight back to sleeping in their own room. It's best to be consistent during a period when you're changing a sleep pattern and establishing independent sleep. After this, lots of families enjoy cuddling up together, although the proclivity for rolling and perpendicular sleeping makes kids not the best bed partners. My child will only nap in her stroller. Is that okay? It's not likely that your child will sleep as long or have as good quality sleep in her stroller or car seat as she would in her bed. Review the section on naps and use the sleep wave checks to respond to her if she cries when you put her down for a nap. Remember that a consistent nap schedule and a short nap routine are important to help prepare and cue your child's body for sleep. Should we take the pacifier away from our 2.5-year-old daughter? My dentist says we should, but it really helps her sleep. It's true that by this age, ending pacifier use is best for your child's teeth. The good news is that your child needs the pacifier for sleep less than you think. She's used to having it, but she doesn't really need it. Choose a day when you pack up all the pacifiers to send them to a younger baby. Empathize that saying goodbye to them is hard, and help her choose a new stuffed animal or cozy PJs to add to her self-soothing repertoire. You may have a few bumpy nights, but stick to your sleep plan and she will adapt.
Chapter 6. Special Circumstances. Co-sleeping and bed sharing. The term co-sleeping means to sleep in close proximity to your baby, either in a co-sleeper, bassinet, or crib in your bedroom. Having your baby in close proximity is the American Academy of Pediatrics' recommended way for your newborn to sleep. Bed sharing, or having a family bed, means that you share a sleep surface with your baby or child. Interestingly, most families don't identify themselves as bed sharing, but in our experience, and research backs us up here, having baby in bed with parents is incredibly common. So many families do it, but people don't usually talk about it. This is probably because advice on bed sharing tends to be polarized, either being fully supported and endorsed as the best practice or presented as an unsafe no-no. Here, we'll offer you a reasonable, well-rounded look at the question of bed sharing and either help you do it in the safest, most sleep-conducive way or figure out how to transition to independent sleep if you wish. Babies sleep with their parents for different reasons. Parents plan to share a bed with their baby for an extended period of time, or as long as everyone is getting enough sleep. Parents plan to share a bed for the first 3 to 4 months or so, and then move baby into her own crib and room. Parents plan to put baby down in her crib in her own room at bedtime, and then bring her into parents' bed during the night. An older child might move himself to the parents' room in the middle of the night or early morning and finish sleeping there. Parents don't have a clear plan, but find themselves bringing their baby or older child into their bed because nothing else seems to be working. In the first three scenarios, parents are making the choice to share a bed, while in the last scenario, bed sharing is a reaction to a sleep issue. When people ask for our advice on their sleep arrangements, we start by asking two questions. One, is everyone sleeping well, including both parents and baby? And two, is everyone in the family happy with the arrangement? If the answer to both is yes, there's no reason to change a thing, as long as all safety rules are being carefully followed. Especially in the newborn months, having your baby in the bed can be convenient for feeding and actually help everyone sleep. And let's face it, some babies are like heat-seeking missiles, bent on proximity. There are valid concerns and downsides to sharing a sleep surface with your child, though. Here's an overview of the pros and cons to sharing a bed. The benefits of having baby in your bed. Breastfeeding. More frequent arousals. Mom's smell and close proximity mean that nursing gets a boost when mom and baby are sleeping together. Sharing a bed or having your baby in a co-sleeper also means that you don't have to get out of bed to nurse your baby throughout the night. Physiological benefits. Some studies have shown that mom and baby sleep is altered slightly when sleeping in close proximity. For example, babies have less deep sleep and more frequent arousals when they're close to mom, both of which may be protective against SIDS. Bonding. Having baby next to you feels good to some parents, especially those who may not feel like they have enough time with their baby during the day. It's not forever. Whether or not your baby tucks in with you in the first months of life doesn't mean anything about her future sleep habits. If bed sharing works for you, don't worry that you'll be sleeping with your elementary schooler. It's true that changing a sleep pattern can take work, especially if your child is older and more aware. But if you're consistent, you can absolutely do it. Benefits of baby sleeping on her own. Safety. The biggest consideration when it comes to sharing a bed is your baby's safety, which is why the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends sharing a room with your newborn, but not a sleep surface. In our experience, many people who don't plan to have their baby in bed end up this way unintentionally, and these families are less likely to fully research or understand the safety information for bed sharing, whereas people who plan to share a bed often investigate this topic in preparation. If you are bed sharing, whether you mean to or not, it's very important to read all of the current safety information very thoroughly and follow all recommendations. See the list of resources in the PDF. These are a good place to start your research. Parents' sleep quality. Your baby spends less time in deep sleep when you're right next to her, and you might too. Some parents, especially moms, don't sleep as soundly with baby nearby, and babies can be noisy. If this is the case, you might decide to move your baby to another sleep surface in the same room or transition her to another room when you're ready. Your sleep and your partner's are very important. Grown-up time. If you're sleeping with your baby, will you and your partner have alone time in the evenings? It can be hard to foster self-soothing in a baby who is sharing a bed. So many parents start to either keep baby up until they go to bed or lie down with their child until she's asleep, dozing off themselves in the process. Having grown-up time at night is a good idea, so you might consider putting your baby down in a crib for the first portion of the evening and bringing her into your bed if she wakes up in the middle of the night. Many parents worry that if they share a bed with their baby, the baby will have a hard time learning to sleep independently. It's true that your older baby or toddler might have feelings about moving to her own bed, or she may welcome the idea, you never know. But as with all aspects of sleep, if you're confident and consistent, she will make the transition just fine. Improving sleep when you're bed sharing. This section is for families who are choosing to share a bed for all or part of the night. 0 to 4 months. All of the concepts in Chapter 3 for helping babies move gradually toward self-soothing can also be applied when sharing a bed. For example, to use the soothing ladder with your bed-sharing baby, you'll try shushing, patting, jiggling, replacing the pacifier, and other steps on the ladder before picking her up and feeding her when she wakes. In addition, the following strategies for improving self-soothing, which also happen to be the most crucial ones for all little sleepers, apply but need a little more explanation when sharing sleep. Put your baby down awake. Look for opportunities to practice putting your baby down awake at least once a day. When sharing sleep, this often involves ending a feeding, whether breast or bottle, before baby falls asleep. Watch closely, and when slow swallows turn to quick flutters, take your baby gently off the breast or bottle and let him finish falling asleep. Even if you've been nursing all the way to sleep for a while, you can shift to this approach. When you first do this, it's often necessary to put your baby back on and off the breast or bottle over and over until he finally falls asleep without it. Each time you try this method, the number of repetitions should decrease. It can be pretty tricky as it requires you to stay awake and pay attention to the feeding. Discern your baby's sounds. If baby is fussing, whining, grunting, or squawking, resist the urge to swoop in. Babies can be very noisy on their way to self-soothing. This is especially difficult when the little noisemaker is right there next to you. It's a natural impulse to immediately start patting or shushing. As hard as it is, practice playing possum and see if your baby can fall back to sleep without your help. Every time she does, she is strengthening this ability. Don't overhelp. If your baby wakes up at night, be curious about the least intrusive thing you can do to settle her. Resist responding right away and stay curious about what, over time, your baby may be capable of. Last night, he may have needed that pat, 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 whereas tonight, he may fall back to sleep without it. Don't let baby cry for long, though. For the first 4 months, we don't recommend letting your baby cry for more than roughly 1 minute. 5 months to 2 years. The sleep wave, described in Chapter 4, can be applied when your baby is going to sleep in her crib or co-sleeper for naps, at initial bedtime, and during the first stretch of the night while you're still up, and before you bring her into your bed. Your baby should not be put to bed alone in your bed. What's harder is keeping the pattern consistent when your baby wakes during the night in bed with you. You can also choose to use the gradual weaning formula to wean from some or all night feedings. This is challenging with baby in your bed, but it's possible and can improve sleep significantly. If mom is nursing, it's helpful that she wear a nursing top of some kind so that the milk supply can be put away once the feed is over or once it's completely weaned. If you continue to bed share, once your baby can move around and roll, it's important to ensure that she doesn't fall out of bed, whether you're there in the bed with her or not. Options include bed rails and putting your mattress on the floor with a rug or carpet around the edges. It's also key to never have any crevices where your baby could get trapped between the bed and the wall, headboard, or anything. Don't use pillows or anything soft to form a barrier to keep your baby from falling out of the bed. Make sure to do your own research and find the best resources for safe bed sharing. Moving your child to her own room. If you decide that you want your baby or child to start sleeping independently, you can make this change by following a consistent plan. Based on your child's age and personality, this process will be different. Some will have more trouble getting used to the new setup, while others may even sleep better and welcome the space at night. Moving a baby. Number 1, make sure that you've listened to the healthy sleep habits section for your baby's age and put these building blocks in place. Number two, the first step is to help your baby get comfortable in his room. Spend time playing there